Hello and welcome to In Conversation With, a podcast by the Lancet Public Health. I'm Annika Knuppe, and I'm honoured to be joined by Hannah Cooper, who led two papers in our May issue, a mixed method study on the association between disability and mortality, and a narrative review on disability-inclusive health systems. Professor Cooper is an NIHR Global Research Professor and co-director of the International Centre for Evidence and Disability at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine.
So, to set the scene, when we are talking about disabilities and people living with disabilities, what conditions and circumstances are we talking about?
So, the UK Equalities Act says you're disabled if you have a physical or mental impairment that has a substantial and long-term negative effect on your ability to do normal daily activities. So it's about having the impairment as well as the reduction in activities. And that can be because of the impairment, but also because of the environment in which you live, things and your personal factors, like whether there are ramps or policies in place, or whether you have access to assistive technologies. So disability is really broad, and it captures this full range of impairments: vision, hearing, psychosocial, physical. It might seem really odd to compare this different group of people because they can be really disparate. But on the other hand, there are lots of commonalities of experiences across impairment types, like higher likelihood of poverty, stigma and discrimination, and exclusion from education and different experiences, including from health, which is the focus of these papers in The Lancet Public Health. And disability is a really, really important issue because globally there are 1.3 billion people with disabilities, so that's one in six people. 80% of them live in low and middle income countries. So, and disability becomes even more common in older ages. So maybe a third to half of people over 60 are disabled. And this is also the population that has the greatest healthcare needs. So this question of disability and health is a really, really important one. And that's why we produce these papers.
Oh, in your first study, you summarised the evidence on the association between living with a disability and mortality. So why did you choose to look at mortality in particular, and what did you find?
Over the last couple of decades, there's been lots of growing evidence that, on average, people with disabilities have worse health. And this is really across the board. So we can think a bit about the prevalence of HIV, about the likelihood of cancer screening, the likelihood of diabetes, you name it. There's a link between disability and health status. There has also been growing awareness on the importance of mortality, which is obviously a really powerful marker for health. So, for instance, in the UK about 10 years ago, there was a confidential inquiry about the early mortality of people with intellectual disabilities, and it showed that people with intellectual disabilities in the UK were dying up to 20 years earlier, and that was often because of health system failures. So that raised the awareness of really thinking about mortality. And then that became even more important during COVID. So we knew that different groups were more likely to die from COVID, and it became clear quite early on that one of them was people with disabilities. So in the UK, it was estimated that 16% of adults are people with disabilities. But among the people who died from COVID, that were 59% had disabilities. And for instance, other data shows that one in 10 people who died from COVID had dementia. So there was a really strong link. And we did a systematic review, and we also showed again that people with disabilities were more than twice as likely to have died from COVID. And generating this data was really important, and it could lead to policy change. So, for instance, we did a study looking at UK data, and we showed that people with learning disabilities were much more likely to die from COVID, and that this was even higher for people with Down syndrome. And this helped to change the policy so that people with intellectual disabilities became prioritised for COVID vaccination. So we know that mortality is really important and a really important lever for change. The problem is that before we did this study, there really wasn't data summarising the link between disability and mortality. So we did that in a systematic review, and we showed that people with disabilities had over twice the mortality rates of people without disabilities. And so we wanted to sense check that in this paper. And so we also looked at, we did a review of other impairment types like vision and cognition in relation to mortality. We found the same patterns. So the problem is that increased mortality is a really hard thing to conceptualize because we're all eventually going to die. So what does it mean to have a higher mortality rate? It's different to thinking about having a higher cancer rate, say. And so that's why we did modeling to translate that increased mortality into the life expectancy gap. And what we found was that the life expectancy gap between people with and without disabilities was 15 years. So they're dying 15 years earlier than their peers without disabilities. And that's probably even higher in the poorest parts of the world. And so again, we sense checked it and we found that this was consistent with the really little data that there is on life expectancy and disability. And so I think this statistic of 15-year life expectancy gap is really, really shocking. And we hope that this will become an impetus and a spur to action for global health actors and researchers and healthcare workers.
So this life expectancy gap of 15 years is really shocking and incredibly large. From your papers, I understand that you identify health systems as one of the contributing factors to this gap. Can you give us some examples how health systems exclude people with disabilities at this moment?
So we know that health systems are really critical for achieving universal health, and that was also very clear from the COVID pandemic. And so there's an increasing focus of global health efforts to strengthen health systems and make them resilient to different shocks. So we need to start thinking from this health system perspective about how we can change them to make them more inclusive of people with disabilities. But it's really hard to know where to start. It can seem really overwhelming because there's so many different things that make a health system. So we developed what we've called the Missing Billion Framework, and that's a structured way for looking at health systems to see if they're disability inclusive and where the first point should be to make changes. And so ultimately, what we want to do is build health systems that expect, accept, and connect people with disabilities. So that means that it shouldn't come as a surprise when there's somebody with disabilities, comes forward as a patient, that they're accepted, that there are positive attitudes towards them, and that they're connected both to be able to reach the health service, but also connected within to the other services that they need. So looking through this kind of health systems lens at whether health systems are inclusive of people with disabilities, the evidence that's available clearly shows that they're not, that they're failing people with disabilities, and this is happening across the board. So for instance, if we think about this deeper systems level, there's a lack of good policy and laws. For instance, in the EU, only half of the countries have legislation that both prohibits discrimination against people with disabilities when they're seeking healthcare and also requires health services to give reasonable accommodations like extra long interview times when that's needed or a sign language interpreter. And that's in the EU. We can think of kind of other systems level things like there's often a lack of finance devoted to disability. Many countries lack leadership on disability within the Ministry of Health, and they're really large gaps of data and evidence. And then when we think of the service level, so that's when people are seeking care, we find really big gaps there. So they're really inaccessible health facilities, and healthcare workers often lack knowledge and skills to give high quality care for people with disabilities because there's often a lack of training. So for instance, in the UK, there's now mandatory training on intellectual disability and autism for all healthcare workers, but not for other disabilities. And then finally, there's also gaps in the provision of rehabilitation and assistive technologies by the health system, which are often needed by people with disabilities. And that's particularly true in the poorest parts of the world, where those services are rarely available, but remember where 80% of people with disabilities are living. So it's really likely that these health systems failures are contributing to that mortality gap. And that was specifically shown by the UK Confidential Inquiry into the early mortality of people with ID, which showed that health system failures were part of the explanation of that life expectancy gap.
So as part of your work, you also identified sort of positive sides and 90 good examples for disability inclusive health systems. I would love to know from your perspective, which were the most impactful and maybe most ambitious examples you found?
So thanks for that question. I mean, it's a really hard one to answer because although we found evidence of good practice, there have been almost no impact evaluations of them. So we have very little data about what actually works or is the most impactful in terms of people with disabilities. And then the other side of it is that all of the components are important. So there's not a magic bullet. It's not like we can give a drug or a vaccine and this issue of access to healthcare inequities for people with disabilities are going to go away. We're going to have to change lots of things within the health system. So, for instance, without good policy or leadership or money or evidence, the service is not going to improve to be inclusive. And so I think maybe instead we need to think about kind of levers of change and potential kind of quick wins. So, I mean, I'm a researcher, and starting with that angle, evidence is really important. I've talked about the confidential inquiry a couple of times, which led to a broad range of changes within the NHS to provide better services for people with intellectual disabilities. For instance, there was the establishment of a learning disability register. There's now mandatory training on learning disability, and people on the register are invited for regular health checks. Or the other example is about how that data that we could produce on the link between COVID mortality and people with intellectual disabilities led to policy change and the prioritisation of vaccination. So that evidence is really important. Without that evidence, I don't think much is going to happen. And that's why we're excited about this paper, because we're hoping that it provides some of the impetus to action. I think healthcare worker training can be a really important lever and a potential quite quick win. So we know that a massive issue is that people with disabilities complain about not receiving quality care from their healthcare provider, and that healthcare providers say that they don't have the knowledge or skills to be able to provide that care. And so training will be really important, and including that in curriculum in different countries could be very impactful. I've mentioned policy. So this policy, changing policy is important because then there's accountability. So if the policy said services have to be inclusive, then there can be monitoring of that and accountability to make sure that this is enforced. Healthcare services in most countries, there's a requirement that they are accessible, but this is rarely audited or monitored. But if you do that, it can have really big impacts. So for instance, we did some work in Brazil where there was a national audit of healthcare facilities, and they were financially incentivized so that the facilities that did better in a range of different variables, including accessibility, got more funding. And that seems to have contributed to improved accessibility of those services. And I also think that we need to think about affordability, that health system failures are one of the issues why people with disabilities have got a low life expectancy, but poverty and exclusion is another. And so we need to tackle affordability of services through things like health insurance and livelihood schemes. And I'm actually calling today, I'm joining this podcast from Uganda, where as part of my NIHR professorship, I'm working on one of these integrated programs to try and address this issue. And again, because there's no magic bullet, we've had to come at it from different angles. So our ambition is to improve access to healthcare for people with disabilities in rural Uganda, and that's where I'm calling from. And we're setting up something that's three-pronged. So there's healthcare worker training for people in Uganda, for the healthcare workers. There's facility audits to see whether those facilities are accessible and what changes can be made. But really importantly, we've set up community action groups of people with disabilities where they're coming together in their villages to talk about their issues with access to healthcare and how they can overcome them. And in the pilot one so far, most of them have worked together on income generations and saving programs to try and improve their affordability to be able to access care. And I'm now here because we're going to try and we are starting a large randomized controlled trial to provide that evidence about what is impactful or not.
You've answered to some extent my last question, but I'm still going to ask it. Given the findings of this work and your ongoing work, what would you say? What's next and what should be next?
So from my perspective, now is the time to translate into action. We now have evidence, but now we need to do something about this to try to reduce the life expectancy gap. From a personal experience perspective, I've been a researcher now for over 20 years, and that's been a wonderful and very interesting career, but there can also be frustrations because you can produce a nice paper, but what happens after it's published, and does it actually change anything? So over the last few years, I've collaborated with other colleagues working in global health to set up this, what we're calling the Missing Billion Initiative, which is to improve access to healthcare for people with disabilities. And it's to try and be a catalyst to change systems to become more inclusive. And this is a really new step for me as a researcher, and it's been incredibly motivating, and I've learned a lot. And I found that it is really important to have these kinds of actions to be able to move papers into action. And so from the Missing Billion perspective, in terms of what's next, we think there are kind of four areas that are needed. So firstly, clearly in all countries in the world, governments are responsible for most of the healthcare. So they have to be the first target for making services inclusive. And with the Missing Billion, we're working with different governments in Mozambique, in Chile, in Nigeria, in Abu Dhabi, to work out within that setting how to integrate disability into the health system. The countries are all different, and so there are different targets and there are different opportunities to make change. Of course, there are lots of other actors who are working with governments to start to think about making them inclusive, and the WHO is really important here. But in terms of the second area, they're donors that give vast amounts of money to global health. So they can be bilateral donors, for instance, or philanthropists and so on. And we need to start influencing those donors to try and think about being more disability inclusive. So as one example, there's lots of evidence that disability is linked to HIV. For instance, one in four people living with HIV might have disabilities. And we've also provided evidence that if people with disabilities continue to be left behind by HIV services, so for instance, at the moment, they're less likely to be treated, they're less likely to adhere to drugs. And if that continues, then the modelling shows that the HIV targets from UNAIDS and so on will not be met. So we're trying to persuade these big donors who have masses of money to incorporate disability into their HIV work. So that's just one kind of example. But both of these aspects require evidence. And so we're also trying to generate that evidence to be able to persuade the governments and to persuade the donors that this is a really important issue, like these two papers that we're really excited to have published. There's some areas where we know something is needed, but the intervention doesn't yet exist. So people will ask us something and we can't offer it. And our third pillar of work, therefore, is about innovations. And that's why today I'm working in Uganda on this program about community empowerment, healthcare worker training, and accessibility audits to try and develop these new innovations that could be scaled maybe in Uganda, but maybe also in other settings. And there's lots of innovation going on at the moment about the training of different types of healthcare workers in different contexts to make them more aware about disability. And I think looking forward, there are lots of exciting innovations here. You know, we need to start thinking about how we can use AI both to improve the data that we have on disability, for instance, but also whether AI can help support healthcare workers and people with disabilities in answering questions on health or how do they achieve quality care. So, for instance, could a healthcare worker use AI when they're struggling with the question about how to examine somebody who is deaf and cannot hear? Could AI help answer that question? And then finally, a final thing that I think is needed in this field specifically is some kind of global movement. So there are different actors, not enough, but there are different actors working on how to improve disability inclusion in health systems, and we need to bring them together. We need to get new actors, new people into the field, and to try to amplify these activities. It's a really big issue. There are 1.3 billion people with disabilities, and at the moment they're dying 15 years earlier. So we need lots of different actors working in different spheres to do their bit. And then together we can really tackle this issue and reduce the life expectancy gap for people with disabilities.
That was Professor Hannah Cooper. You can read the papers on disability and mortality and disability inclusive health systems now on thelancet.com. I would like to thank Professor Cooper for speaking to me and you for listening. You can subscribe to this podcast any place you get podcasts, and we look forward to you tuning in again.